There we go.
Welcome to the Liberty Block Live. I'm Elliot Axelman. We have an awesome guest with us today. It's the first time we're having him on, and I'm super excited. Mr. Daniel Behrman, live from Mexico. Thank you very much for joining us. He's the founder of TaxationIsDeath.Cards.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. How's it going?
It's fantastic. How are you? How's Mexico? Better than America?
Oh, man, the weather's nice. And yeah,
we're getting a whole lot of crap right now.
Yeah, it's in a lot of ways... It's an eye-opening experience. Let me just say that there are so many things that I see and I'm like, man, we can't get away with that in America. So much freedom down here.
You told me a while ago when I asked how you were doing in Mexico, you said there are a lot of laws because enforcement seems to be not quite as robust and consistent as America. You actually end up with more freedom, even though there are more laws down there.
Yes. Yeah, so one of the interesting things is, you know, they have like an income tax, but they don't have a huge IRS to enforce it. They do have building codes, but, you know, for the most part, if you're, you know, just some guy with some house, they don't have these massive computer systems that have every single dwelling in it. It's, you know, and because of that, and, you know, it might have something to do with the postal system. That's, you know, they don't really have, I mean, some places they do, some places they don't. They don't always have street names or numbers on the houses or anything like that. So, yeah. So, you know, maybe that's got some of, you know, some of the reasons if they can't get the mail to you, they can't send you a fine. Right.
That's actually a pretty good pitch for moving there. If my, Espanol were un poquito mejor que es en este momento, I'll be moving there like tomorrow. But yeah. I keep working on it because that sounds amazing. The fact that, like you said, it's very interesting. In America, we have, you know, the taxation and the IRS, and the IRS has its own SWAT team, right? They have a lot of power. They can get the money out of you. But Mexico has the taxes, but if they don't have the enforcement mechanism, the law enforcement to actually do it, you know, it ends up being pretty free, which is incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty awesome. And it's really... it's really pretty open into, you know, there are businesses that are, you know, they're pretty good size, legitimate businesses that will, you know, when they give you the bill, they'll say, you know, just like most places in the US, they'll say, well, here's the price if you pay cash, here's the price if you pay credit card, and then here's the price if you don't want a receipt, which is even a little bit lower. So, and you know what that is, and everybody knows what it is, and it's, you know, nobody's, they don't really try to hide it. It's really pretty interesting. So
that's amazing. I really want to dive into that, the whole law enforcement, how strong the law enforcement mechanism is in there versus here, because on libertyblock.com, we write a lot about law enforcement, about holding them accountable, but also making it so that we change the law so that police don't enforce victimless crimes and all that. But before we get to that, and before we get to some other questions, I want to ask you, do you have any thoughts or comments or analysis on the election last Tuesday?
It's not really. I've been trying to stay out of it. I mean, I know, you know, I see all the Democrats and the Republicans and I'm like, eh, on both sides. I see some libertarians and, you know, some of them are putting up a good fight. Some of them did really well. But at the same time, you know, I see various things. I see the libertarians who are kind of the linos. They're libertarian in name only. They're not real libertarians. Then I see some real libertarians doing some real effort, you know, that are really pushing the envelope as far as what they do. And then, of course, they don't get, you know, too much in the polls. You know, of course, they do. I mean, they come up with, you know, some pretty decent numbers. Clayton Hunt got, I think, like 9%. And he's going into a three-way, or sorry, no, a special election. because I guess the person he was running against, I don't know, she was already in office or she took another office or there's some weird stuff going on like that. So basically he's got a special election coming up in the next month to kind of recover from that. But it's still, it's kind of like, you know, 10% is, I think when we're looking at numbers like that, the damage done to the system is not in getting those. It does. They recognize it. They see, oh, these libertarians are starting to get more votes. I see that what that does. But I think really they need to just be focusing. And this is what I do on my campaigns is, you know, really just focus on reaching as many people as possible with the message that we are not government property, taxation is theft, and, you know, full on libertarianism, not this watering it down for, you know, oh, let's make it more palatable, which I will say this, you know, I do agree when they are full on libertarian and they make that message more palatable. I do agree with that, but that's kind of, I guess that's the fine line between, between selling out and selling libertarianism. So there's that to be said, but yeah, it's, you know, it's there was some interesting stuff going on and I think we made a little bit of noise, but I would have liked to have seen a lot better done.
Yes. So actually it seems like the libertarians in the past election last Tuesday, Libertarian Party candidates, official libertarians, seemingly at least made enough of a threat. They were threatening enough that the bigger mainstream hosts like Sean Hannity and some others, and also, I think Levin, but also Donald Trump apparently tweeted about the U.S. Senate race, I believe in Indiana, about a libertarian, you know, they were pretty threatened, pretty afraid that the libertarian would take enough votes that the Republican would not be able to unseat Joe Donnelly in Indiana.
Right.
So, Sean Hannity was talking about it every day. He was very upset and yelling at people who are planning to vote libertarian, and I think Trump tweeted about it. So that was interesting to see. That was pretty encouraging, actually, as an official libertarian. See,
yeah,
making enough noise that they're threatened.
And I think I'm actually going to have Nick Sarwark on my show in, I think, about a week or two. He did some damage in his mayoral race where he actually caused the two, him and another candidate, I think it was a Green Party candidate, took enough votes to make sure that neither of the main, of the two big parties got a 50% vote. So now they're going to have some sort of a runoff, which is, you know, hey, that's, you know, I'm hoping at least it will get people talking like, wait, what do you mean somebody didn't win? How is that possible?
It's a big impact, you know, making them have a second election in the runoff because no one got a majority. But also, if you saw the debate, and I saw, I think, most of the debate with Nick Sarwark and a few others in the debate stage in Arizona, he clearly won that debate. I think there was a poll afterwards and there was a clear consensus he won the debate. Because as a libertarian who, you know, decently articulated speaker, it's easy to win a debate because, you know, we have obviously the right arguments. So
yeah, I mean, he's really good at what he does. I don't think I'd ever want to debate him. He's and he's one of those libertarians where I think he's, you know, you can't say he's a watered down libertarian, but he's also very, you know, you always see him in a suit. He's very professional. He's not one of these crazies, and I include myself in that group because, you know, we run around with big hats or big beards.
So it's not the hats. So you know, all these members, the fans of the show who don't know about taxation and stuff, about cards, about the cards that you made, I think that's how you got started, and about the funny hat and stuff. Could you tell my audience a little bit about your activism?
Sure. So I kind of started this. I got robbed by the IRS, as everybody else does. So I started this thing. I started seeing taxation as theft on the internet every once in a while, and I was like, yeah, I really like that. And it really started catching on with me. And I was like, man.
How long ago did you make the site?
Oh, how long ago did other people start it?
No, did you? When did you?
Did me? Yeah, I started the Facebook page like maybe almost 2 years ago. And I started with these little, they're like, I'm looking for one right now, but I think I gave them
all up. Spot in the other room.
But it's like $100 bill. It looks like $100 bill when you fold it up and you leave it on the ground and people see it and they're like, ooh, it's $100. But then you open it up and on the inside, it's like, it's a half $100 bill and it says taxation is theft on the inside. And so that was kind of the first thing. That's what started the taxation is theft cards. And then from there, I just started adding other stuff. Everything from stickers to t-shirts and mugs.
Card, it's, I think yours is the most famous and the most popular tipping card that, you know, I see around on the internet now. And that's why I bought a few hundred. Can you tell us a little bit about that tipping card?
Sure. So there's a tipping card it's basically, it's a yellow card that says taxation is theft on it. And when you leave a tip at a restaurant, you leave the card and basically it says, you know, this is not a tip. It's a gift. You don't have to pay taxes on it. And here's a website with some more information on it. So it's, you know, it's just another way that, you know, people are like, this actually got really popular in the last year. Not even just with my cards, but with people writing, you know, $0 in the, you know, they pay with a credit card for the tip, they write zero and cross it out. And then they leave cash tip and they write taxation as theft on the receipt. So it's like, it is really, getting popular and everybody's doing it. And now everybody's posting it online. And you know, it's good to see this kind of stuff because, you know, there's a bumper sticker I saw years ago that said, "Where have all the hippies gone?" And it's kind of like, you know, you feel the same, you look back and you're like, man, there was so much great activism like back in the day and no one's really doing anything anymore. And this is kind of like a little way that we can start getting people involved to say like, hey, yeah, let's actually start doing this again.
Yeah. So from your activism, and you actually helped us a little bit, last year, I guess last legislative session with House Bill 628, you made that video that I think reached at least a few thousand people to expose a new bill that created a new program. A new program in New Hampshire would have been funded by a new payroll tax, which is the same thing as an income tax. And you were one of the parties that helped to eventually kill that bill after it passed the House and died in the Senate. I don't know if I updated you since, but yeah, it did fail. So thank you for that.
Yeah, I saw that. And that was pretty awesome. And that was actually a huge bump we got about a year ago. We published a video. So there's an organization, Freedom Law School, who's been offering a bounty that, you know, says, you know, there's no law that says you have to pay income tax. If you can find it, we'll give you. And it started out with $10,000 and it went up to $50,000 and now it's at $300,000. And I made a video about it and that actually went up to 6 million views. So of course that kind of got me more into like the video, trying to see like, okay, let me create more videos like this that drop knowledge about the income tax itself. And I made a few that, you know, like the bill you were talking about that talks about new bills that are out there that are going to either create a new tax or destroy a tax. Steve Kerbal had his, we made a video for it, which is Stop the Shakedowns. Where instead of
video, I think I saw from you. I think that might have been how I learned about you because I saw that video and I loved it. I loved the idea.
Yeah, it's really awesome. And actually, so Joe Bannister happened to see one of them. And I don't know, you know, Joe Bannister. He used to be a special agent for the IRS, and then he found out there's no law, so he quit. And he was actually a big activist back in the, I guess, in the mid '90s is when he quit. He actually confronted his employer and said, you know, the IRS, whoever his manager was, and they basically said, okay, keep your mouth shut or resign. And so he resigned and became an activist. And, you know, when I interviewed him, he was like, oh, he's like, or before the show, he's like, oh, are you the guy who made that video? I saw that. And I was like, man, our paths have to cross at some point. Cause that was really awesome. So that was really, you know, cause like, you know, I don't want to say like, you know, one of my childhood heroes was Joe Bannister, a CPA, right? That's like totally a weird thing to say, but as a tax protester, I guess it kind of makes sense. So for him to say like, hey, I saw that video and it was awesome was like, you know, totally cool. So I think, you know, I really just want to keep doing this because it's reaching a lot of people and getting the word out there and helping people to understand that taxation is theft.
Yeah, it is. So you may be contemplating running for the Libertarian Party nomination for president in 2020 to challenge Trump, should he run for re-election. Could you tell us, if you were to do it, why? What would push you to undertake such an endeavor?
So I'm pretty much in it. What I'm saying now is I can't tell you that I'm running for president, but I can't tell you that I'm not. Basically there's, you know, I have the intent to do this. I've seen, I shouldn't say I have the intent because now I'm, I just threw myself into all kinds of legal trouble, but, you know, it's really a matter of free speech thing, right? As soon as you file, then you're obligated to like do all these filing requirements and there's certain things you can or cannot say and the way you have to say them and all this ridiculous crap. And I'm like, no, this is free speech. What I'm doing is political free speech and I'm trying to inform people.
And this is the, what was the big case
The Citizens United.
Citizens United. All campaign finance, it's a matter of free speech. It's not about, you know, companies, corporations, buying politicians. It's not about that. It's about, you know, free speech or not. So, you know, people should be able to do what they want to do.
Right. And what's really fascinating is, so when I ran for Texas House in, I think it was 2014, what I started to realize is all these, like, because everybody's like, yeah, we need more of these campaign laws that keep the money out of politics. But the reality is,
money will never be out of politics.
Well, yes, that too. But these laws that people are thinking that are trying to do that are actually hurting the libertarian candidates the worst, because you have things like a donor can only donate a maximum of like $2,500 in particular elections. That was the rule on mine. I couldn't have someone give me more than $2,500. Well, what does that mean? If there's a Democrat running against me, well, they have this whole fan base of like, you know, tens of thousands of people in my district that they can say, hey, 100 of you give me $2,500 and there you go. But for me to do that, it's like, okay, I can't reach that many people because I don't have the funds to reach that many people. I don't have a history of a party that's got that many people in my district that's as big as these other parties. So for me, it's kind of like, okay, if I know a couple people and they've got $10,000, $20,000 and they say, hey, I really believe in you, let me give you a lot of money, I can't take it. So well, really,
that's how super PACs, you know, funnel money, right?
Right. And so you can do that. But then, you know, okay, what is a PAC and how do you file it and where do you file it and all this other stuff? It's not like you can just, you know, call up 411 and say, yes, can I have the PAC office? You know, there was a libertarian who was a lawyer and he was running for, I can't recall what he was running. It was a statewide office and he was trying to set up a PAC and he couldn't even figure it out. And this is a lawyer. Of course, you know, that's not his area of expertise, but the point is it's still a complicated system. And, you know, unless you've got a history of being in these, you know, dealing with this type of thing, such as the people who are in the big parties and
having a party infrastructure already, all you got to do is run. They have the infrastructure in place already for the PACs.
Exactly. Yeah. It's really fascinating. I've talked to a lot of people who kind of work in those systems because I've never helped a candidate run in any of those systems. I don't know too much about it, but I've talked to a lot of people who basically say, yeah, I mean, you can. As soon as you run, it's like they have all the infrastructure in place. They have the volunteers, they have the offices, they have everything you need. All you got to do is say, oh yeah, I'll do it. It's almost like you don't even have to run. They run the campaign for you and you win. And it's, you know, I don't think people see that when they see an election going on. They see the candidate, they see them do a couple interviews or debates and they're like, yeah, that's awesome.
The campaign.
But exactly. But that's not what sways all the votes. Unfortunately, it is like the yard signs and the flyers and all this crap that like they have hundreds of thousands of volunteers or paid employees who are doing all this stuff because they have that capital and that infrastructure.
Yeah. So if you were to run for the presidency for the Libertarian Party nomination for president, what would your platform be about? What would you focus on in your campaign?
So I've got a few things. One of them, obviously, taxation and theft. We're going to get rid of taxes, especially we're going to start with the income tax. We're going to get everybody. The IRS is getting fired. Sorry, guys. But on that note, with the free market, there will be so many jobs. Nobody will be unemployed. Not even all of the illegal immigrants that everyone's complaining is stealing their jobs. There's going to be so many jobs. You're not going to know what to do with them. But we've also got the national debt, which is actually everybody quotes it as like, I think it's they say 20, 21 trillion. It's really 24 trillion, 25 trillion. If you add, or actually, no, sorry, 26 and something. If you add in all the state and city local government debt, it's a little bit bigger. But here's the thing. Who's that owed to? And why are we paying it? Right. The IRS says that. They're like, I didn't borrow the money, right? I didn't sign for it. I didn't receive it. I didn't spend it. Why am I on the hook for paying?
Social contract. Come on, Daniel.
Yeah. So it's so my tagline for it is not my debt. It's not my debt. I'm not going to pay it. And a lot of this debt's just going to be written off, dissolved, and that's it. Kind of like we're filing bankruptcy, because that's what happens when, I mean, if you had a corporation and every year that corporation went further and further and further into debt, what bank is going to keep lending it money? And yet people keep lending money to the U.S. Now, of course, it's a fake bank, and then there's us who keep buying into it. But yeah, it's a scam system. And if we just say, look, debt's gone, then first of all, yeah, it's going to ruin our credit rating. But hey, what does that mean? Nobody lends us money, which means no more debt. Problem solved, right?
Sounds good, yeah.
It's one of those things where it's like, it sounds crazy, but if you actually look into it, it really makes sense in a lot of ways. You know, somebody asked me about, well, what about like all the US Treasury bonds that are out there? Like that's part of that debt that's going to be defaulted on. Okay, sure. Well, a lot of those bonds are being held by the Federal Reserve. Screw them. That's a bank that was, we owe them all this.
Good people like you and me who have some, they might be stupid for buying US bonds because the US government's trash.
Right. Yeah, retirement funds. There are all types of investment funds that hold onto those treasuries. But here's the thing. If you go, if there's a new startup and they're selling bonds or stocks and you want to buy from them, you are required by law to make you sign all these disclosure forms that say, I understand it's a risky investment. And
that's the thing. If you do any investment ever, don't they like have to? They have to warn you. And every investor does. They say, you know, you can lose all of it. It is what it is. You can lose all of it.
And it's really scary to read that. I've read some of those and I'm like, holy shit, this basically says you're not going to get your money back.
Well, one rule of investing, the primary rule is don't invest any money you are not
you can't lose,
right?
Exactly.
So the same goes for U.S. bonds.
The same rule for investing, yes. But somehow when you buy a U.S. bond, they're like, oh, no, it's backed by the full faith and whatever of the government.
I don't have faith in the U.S. government because they're trash.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, oh, yeah, you don't have to. They're always good forever. No, if you believe that lie, then sorry, you're going to lose some money. And hopefully you don't have all of your life savings in those bonds. But that's the reality of it. I mean, the amount of debt that we have, the source of revenue that the United States government has, there is no way is ever going to pay off the debt. And eventually the system's going to collapse and those bonds are going to be worthless. And better now than later, because more people are going to keep buying into it. And that just means more people get screwed over later.
Anything else in the big campaign platforms that you're going to have?
I'm actually going to be doing a lot of pardoning, nonviolent drug offenses, rescheduling marijuana and everything else down to like schedule 4 or whatever. So it's basically legal. whatever I can do to cut the funding out of like programs like the DEA, the FDA is going to be seriously restricted in what they do. One thing everyone complains about is the cost of healthcare, and a lot of that is pushed up because of the way the FDA operates. And so what I'd like to do, however I can restrict them, in one way. So here's, let me say this. There are, what I want to do legislatively is allow companies to start forming that will do what the FDA does, except do it on a voluntary process. So if you have a new drug,
only the government can make sure our medications are safe. No one else can do it.
Right. So I want to get rid of that monopoly that the government has. But then as far as, you know, what can I do as president? Well, there is the power of pardon, right? So, I can't change the laws, but what I can do is I can say if that law is unjust and you were prosecuted for it, I can pardon you for it, which is the same thing a lot of people have talked about with, you know, a lot of the drug crimes. We want to let nonviolent drug offenders out of prison because they have no reason to be there. A lot of them have been, you know, they're just there because they wanted to use medicine that the government wouldn't allow them to have. Why not do this for some other things as well? That's really where... kind of like what I was saying about Mexico, right? They have all these laws, but they can't enforce them because they don't have the infrastructure. Well, there's also, you know, if you consider that a lot of these, why are these laws enforced? Why are traffic laws enforced, you know, so much more than, you know, other laws that maybe actually affect whether, you know, you're arresting actual violent criminals? Why do they spend their time so much on traffic tickets? And the answer is revenue. Well, if you take away their revenue, and if you let's say, for example, we've got private prisons who are basically paying to get nonviolent offenders stuck in there. If you take away their ability to stock up their prisons based on that, then that kind of like takes away their incentive to start putting these people through that system, because now the states are basically going to be paying all this cost to prosecute people to get into these prisons. And then basically they're getting pardoned and like, hey, wait, what did we go through that whole process for?
I think traffic enforcement is about two things, primarily about control. They just think it's control all of us because we're scared of, you know, enough cop cars. They're, you know, controlling almost everyone who drives, but also revenue. So you have to, you know, address both of those parts.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, that actually, like, so I kind of got into this whole thing, like, when I got my first speeding ticket when I was like, I don't know, maybe 17 or 18, I started, like, you know, the first thing I want to do is I'm going to fight this, you know. And I started learning how to fight these things and actually win. And then, like, you know, years go by and I learned all these, like, more advanced techniques. And then eventually I discovered, wait a minute, this whole system is a scam. It's a game and I don't even have to play it. Why am I going to court to fight these tickets when I can just make them disappear? And so in that way, it's almost kind of like what is the system? It's all smoke and mirrors. And so if, you know, but, you know, like you said, it's power and control. And if they can trick us into believing that, hey, there's this fear, if you don't comply, something really bad is going to happen to you. That's what makes people like, that's why most people walk in there like, hey, I'm going to fight it. And then they, oh, well, if you try to fight it, it's going to cost you more money when you lose. Then it's like, okay, fine, I'll plead guilty. You know, that's how they control people, just with fear. And yeah, so on that level, I think we can get, you know, a lot of people to just kind of stop being afraid of what government is by taking away their power. Then I think we'll have a much more peaceful society and a better relationship between people and government, until possibly maybe it completely goes away. But that's way down the line. Yeah, it's, I don't know. It's interesting to see what's going to happen. And, you know, it's not, I don't want to walk in there with like some utopian, like, oh, we're going to change everything and everything is going to be like, you know, this utopian magic thing. I know, like, that's kind of like the libertarian, you know, maximum 100% libertarian is to say, I'm going to walk in there and all government's going to disappear. The reality is, I know that the only reason people are voting for me to go in there is because I'm not going to do something like that. So as much as I would love to live in that world where I never had to talk to government, like I could live my life, and to me it would be as if government weren't even there unless I actually committed a crime, that would be the perfect world for me to live in. But at the same time, you don't want to just walk in there and tell people like, hey, look, I want you to elect me to the head of your government, which I know you still have some trust in, so that I can shut the whole thing down. I know that that's a total turn off to people, and that's not really my intention. My intention is to, you know, at the very first is to stop all the rights violations that government does, and then to start slowly downsizing it and showing people like, hey, you're more free. Because the reality is, like, you know, when you're free, you don't know you're free, because you're, you know, it's the absence of oppression.
Yeah, control. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
So what are the steps that would take for you to get from here where you're sitting now to the White House? The first big hurdle for you, the first big challenge that you have to overcome, is winning the Libertarian Party nomination for president. And I think that you could have a good shot. You've done a fair amount of activism. You're pretty well known in the Libertarian Party and Libertarian circles, probably. But on the other hand, you're you know, you don't have the experience as a governor like someone like Bill Weld or Gary Johnson. You don't, you know, wear a suit like that, we might not talk like that, we might not have the contacts that obviously Weld, as a governor for a few terms, has some contacts in politics, which I think is more of a bad thing, not a good thing, that he has all those friends in politics. But how would you go in and convince the Libertarian Party delegates and Libertarian Party members to support you, and how would you convince them that you are the best representative, the best candidate for president for the Libertarian Party?
Sure. So over the next year, what I'm planning to do is I have a goal to raise $1 million, which most of that's going to be invested into, you know, all kinds of print materials to give out to volunteers, and then also organizing a huge base of volunteers. Now, this material is not specifically towards the campaign itself. It's towards information and getting this information out to a lot of people. And of course, you know, there is a tie into the campaign, so that as people are receiving this information, they are becoming aware that, hey, there's a non-Democrat, non-Republican person who's running. So if we're able to raise $1 million, then basically what that means is we're going to be able to reach, tens of millions of people with that much money. And so I want to get through all this. I want to have this all accomplished in the next 12 months. So that, you know, basically we can say, hey, look, this is everything that we've done. This is everything that we're going to continue to do. And, you know, whether or not I get your nomination, I'm going to continue to do this. And, you know, hey, if I run as an independent, I'll run as an independent. But, you know, the reality is there are two goals to this campaign. And number one is to wake more people up to say, hey, government is not our friend. We are not government property, and taxation is theft. Because if you, you know, you can go out there and you can just say like, oh yeah, 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 Bernie Sanders was great. Hillary Clinton was great. You should vote for me because I like both of them. Trump's great too. Yeah, vote for me. You can do that. And that's, what does that do? You know, it's like, oh yeah, we're going to Social Security. We're going to make sure you have all that. We're going to, whatever you want. It's pandering. That's pandering. But what I've been doing is in talking to a lot of people who do support, you know, the Bernie Sanders or the Trumps, I've been able to find a way to communicate with them, because the reality is, you know, everybody says libertarians are just selfish, and you know, oh, I only care about me, blah, blah, blah. It's very true. But the reality is, so are the other parties. And if you want to successfully open someone's eyes to the fact that they don't need government and government is the problem and not the solution, you need to know how to talk to them. And most libertarians have this problem where they just say, no, 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 we need more guns and less government and blah, blah, blah. But that scares a lot of people, because there are a lot of people out there who are sick and they need healthcare. And to them, that sounds like, how are guns and less government going to help me get better? They don't make that connection, and the libertarians don't make that effort to tell them. Now, of course, there is that connection. We can say, look, with less government, there's going to be more drugs and procedures available, more drugs available. I know how that sounds. And there's going to be lower costs involved with all of this. That's the reality of what you're going to get.
Give more charity.
Exactly. There are all kinds of ways in which this is going to benefit you, but we need to focus on that message, and we need to focus on reaching out to those people to get that to them, because we can sit around and say, you know, guns are great and taxes suck as much as we want, but that's a very small number of people that are going to come to us to join in chanting that message. We really need to outreach to other people and teach them that, you know, this is the reality that our system is going to benefit you as well too. And I heard so many libertarians complaining about how all these, you know, how could all these Ron Paul people go and now they're liking Bernie Sanders? What's the deal? How's that even possible? Well, the reality is they were both, like, nobody paid much attention to what their policies were. I don't want to say nobody, but a lot of people didn't. They were following because, yeah, Ron Paul is talking about corruption and the system sucks and we need to, you know, fix the system. And you know, there's the elitists and all this other people. We need to get them out of Washington. What did Bernie Sanders say? Pretty much the same thing, right? That was his kind of his war cry, right? This is who we're at war with, is the elitists and the people in Washington who are controlling our lives.
Washington says that nowadays when they campaign.
And that's how Trump won. I mean, it's, you know, it's the same thing. And it's who beats that message harder. I think Hillary has, you know, I don't know if she even tried that, but she can't really, because she's part of the establishment.
It's the establishment, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way she could say, you know, I'm not one of those elitists. That would never fly. But, you know, so there's really, I think, a lot more understanding that needs to go into how we need to communicate to people. And when we communicate to people the right way, we're going to wake them up. And when we wake them up, they're going to give us their votes. So it's kind of like, you know, trying to putting the cart before the horse. Like, you don't just go and say, hey, vote for us, like, because we want no taxes. You have to understand who you're talking to, and you need to figure out, you don't need to lie to them or pander or any of this, which is what some of the watered down libertarians do or call it. But you do need to figure out what's in it for them. Stop thinking about yourself and start thinking about the constituents, because ultimately you're relying on them to open up and have a conversation with you to either wake themselves up or to give you their votes. And I'm happy with either, but that's how we get our foot in the door there.
So it seems from what you're saying now that your campaign would be primarily based on empowering individuals to discover that within themselves they have the power to actually run their lives and accomplish their goals, and they don't need government handouts. And the Democrats haven't been doing that. They haven't been empowering individuals ever, not in my lifetime, maybe not ever. Republicans, as they move towards a welfare state, a mother holding your hand state, the government taking care of you, Daniel will take care of you. Don't worry about health care. Don't worry about food and housing will take care of you. The Republicans also love, you know, free social programs too. That, you know, leaves a lot of space for a libertarian, should you be the nominee, to actually be the one empowering people and making people realize that they have the power, they have the capability to run their own lives. They can work hard. I worked hard, you know, I am able to get a house. I can have a family. I can have money. I can have all these nice things. You can actually make a life for yourself. You could be the one out there, you know, you could be the only candidate of the three campaigning on a message of empowerment instead of more control and more taxes and more control. That's the other two parties. You can actually empower people and say, wait, you don't need the government. You can actually, you know, get a job. I'll help you get a job. Anyone can get a job anywhere and work your way up and make money. And then you can buy a house and live the dream.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's, I'm not sure who came up with this analogy, but it seems to be really, really accurate. Where, you know, they compare the Republican Party to the strong, strict father figure. And then the Democratic Party is the nurturing mother who's going to take care of you and give you, you know, health care and take care of the poor. And then the Republicans are, you know, the strict father, like, no, you need to get a job and you need to, you know, that kind of thing. But then the Libertarian Party is really, and this is where I think, you know, like, so if you look at the family structure, right? What is an opportunity for, like, what happens? When do those two parent figures kind of become obsolete? And that's when the, you know, let's say a child in that family becomes an adult. And so, you know, that's what the Libertarian Party needs to be, is we need to be the one saying, hey, look, we don't need parents anymore. We're adults now. We need to kind of grow out of this, you know, having parents tell us what to do, which is, you know, as much as we make fun of millennials for, you know, oh, they're entitled and they live in their parents' basement and all this other stuff. They're kind of on the cusp of that. They're ready to become adults, but they're like, there's nothing to push them over the edge because their parents aren't going to push them over the edge because their parents have been kind of accustomed to this whole welfare state. So they're kind of giving that same thing onto their kids. It used to be, man, I met this guy once. He had this, you know, this rites of passage thing where he went out into the woods for like 3 days by himself. I think he was, he got this from like some Native Americans who lived around where he did. And that was the thing. Like he spent like 3 or 4 days out in the woods to kind of figure himself out and become a man. And when he came back, he was like, okay, this life is now mine. I don't look to my parents for anything. I'm standing on my own 2 feet. And we don't really have that as a society anymore. Our rites of passage are now, oh, you graduated high school, now go to college. Oh, you graduated high school, now go get a job. And we have this pattern that our life is supposed to be set on, but this is not built on anything that benefits us ourselves. It really benefits kind of the system as a whole. Not everybody wants to fit into that cookie cutter. And I think that's why so many people, you know, they grow up, they do that. They go to college, they get married, they get a job, they get on this career path. And then they start to become miserable because they're like, what's in this for me? Like, I feel like everything I'm doing is benefiting somebody else. And you know, without getting too, libsoc on that, like it's not to say like, hey, yeah, we shouldn't have jobs and we should all, you know, just kind of, you know, everything should be provided for us, but it's to say, hey, we can start our own businesses. We can decide, you know, marriage isn't for me. I want to just be single for the rest of my life and live my life this way. Or I just want to travel the world, or I, you know, whatever it is. I just, you know, you can, there are so many options with your life that nobody has to tell you what that is. You don't have to get it from watching TV, but everybody kind of falls into this trap where we're like, you know, oh, cookie cutter. So, you know, like you said, I really want to empower a lot of people to kind of break out of that, and become their own people and grow and be empowered and you know, learn to think for themselves and live their own lives.
So you have a fantastic message, obviously. And of course I agree, but you're going to be going, trying to win enough, electoral votes to win the presidency, and you'll be campaigning in every state, I assume, against a Republican, probably Donald Trump. and a Democrat, probably either Clinton or some other Democrat with the success and the infrastructure like you spoke about and plenty of money and a big campaign team, are you gonna campaign actually in every state, or are you gonna try to win, pick off a few key states?
Yeah, so what I'm doing right now is I'm picking a few cities to start in. And these are cities that I've lived in for a while, so I know some people there. And also some other cities are just, you know, some bigger cities that have a big population and, you know, some where I have some followers who want to be volunteers. And what that's going to do is these are kind of like the seeds that we're planting. And what I want to do is kind of grow this infrastructure. And as we learn how to get this message out to the, you know, the most efficient way to the most number of people, then I want to have those same volunteers kind of train each other so we can spread across the entire country. So yeah, I do want to reach the entire country, definitely. And it's really, you know, there's a lot of the similar campaign strategies that we're going to do. But there's also a lot of tricks that we're going to pull, because obviously, you know, it's not going to be easy for me to, you know, get CNN, interviews as, you know, as it would be for Clinton. But once we make some noise and once we start doing things that people can't ignore, and once a lot of people start seeing our message, then we are going to start to see that. We are going to start to, you know, break into, hopefully into the mainstream media, where we can't be ignored. And I think this is, you know, they say, you know, Gary Johnson, okay, he got some mainstream coverage. Bill Weld, if he runs, he's going to be able to do the same. But yeah, but because they're basically Republicans, you know, it's they still have all those connections. They still ran with that crowd. They're that's what it is. So, you know, yes, I have to run the campaign a little bit differently, but I do think we have the ability to reach, you know, a huge number of people. And that's the other thing, is I'm not really focusing on finding libertarians as volunteers. Of course, I'm happy to have them, but I don't want this to become another echo chamber, because one thing I know about libertarians is we are very afraid to reach outside of our group. And the problem is, if we never reach outside of our group, we're not going to wake people up, and we're not going to get any votes. Because that's where all the people need to be woken up, is outside of our groups. I see all day people, oh, I'm going to block this guy, he's a Republican, or, you know, it's like, okay, you just cut off the only chance that this Republican ever has to ever have his eyes open.
Current values, yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, a lot of people are stubborn, and yeah, you're not going to wake them up in one conversation, but you know, I've talked to so many Democrats who are just like, oh yeah, I talked to this one Democrat. He's like, I love paying my taxes. And, you know, by the end of the conversation, he wasn't going to budge on taxation as theft, but he did start to think, you know, I started asking him some questions like, well, do you like where all the money's spent? Well, no, I hate all the wars and everything. Do you think it would be better if maybe you had control over where the money was spent? Well, yeah. Well, don't you think you'd have more control over how the money is spent if you didn't give the money to the government and let them decide where to spend it? Well, yeah, I guess. But, you know, and then, of course, they're going to go back to my roads. But at least you're planting seeds and you're getting them to think. And, you know, the more we do this and the more people reach out to them and the more that we organize and start having these conversations with more people and reaching outside of our echo chamber, that's how we're going to get to people.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I've been thinking about it the past few months about the Libertarian Party and why we're not necessarily growing. If you look at the Republican parties and the ideology, but especially the party, they want to grow. That's almost their primary function, to grow and to win elections. The Democrat Party wants to grow and to win elections, so they welcome everyone in. The Libertarian Party actually doesn't welcome people in, because at the door of every single Libertarian Party, there is some kind of litmus test. And if you fail one of the million questions for that particular Libertarian or that group, they won't accept you, and they'll say, oh, get out of here, statist. And that's what I realized, and I'm sure I'm guilty as well, but every other party, they want people to join their party. They want membership, they want dues, they want the numbers, they want the votes, they want the infrastructure. Libertarians, the party, a big issue with leadership, myself and everyone else in the Libertarian Party, but also the whole movement of liberty. It's not quite as accepting as it should be of people who are interested or just dipping in their toe at first.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. And you know, I do hear a lot of people saying we need to grow the party, and those are kind of the party over principle people who, you know, they're willing to let anybody in. But I think, you know, what I see, because libertarians are naturally natural enemies of following orders, What I think when we get, you know, when people join the Democrat Party, I think they're already like, oh, we already like what you have to say, and we already know you're a huge organization, so I'll join. And then there are people who are like, oh, I don't know much about politics. So then they're like, oh, yeah, Democrat. Okay, yeah, sure, fine. I like democracy. So then they join, and then they're told how to think, which is something that...
education. They have to learn about liberty, but also, like you said, you know, we don't tell everyone what to do because we're all unique. Every libertarian is unique.
Exactly. So we do need some sort of like, you know, some onboarding, welcoming education thing that, you know, does teach people about liberty. But I think, and, you know, sometimes we try to do that, but we go a little bit too far. We end up getting into a 2-hour discussion about, you know, different economic philosophies, and everybody falls asleep. So, and then they never come back. So it's, you know, there's, I think, and that's kind of something that I've kind of been, I wouldn't say I've been working on, but I've been, you know, putting some thought into it. Like, you know, what can we do as a program like that? That's kind of going to grow the party itself, but to educate people as they come in. But you know, of course it's, that's another huge project that takes a lot of time. So, maybe after 2020, if I don't win, that's something that I'll get back on and be able to put more time into that.
Now here's my one big issue. And I said, I was going to ask you some difficult questions. I think my one issue with I guess you saying that you might run for the presidency is I want to pick your brain for a minute. Do you really think that the United States, all 320 million plus people, all 50 states, massive country with infinite cultures in it, is salvageable? And is it so uniform that it should be united? And could it ever be united? And should it be united? Because what I learned in history from my parents is that we're 50 individual states, you know, 13 initially, but now 50, with just, mm-hmm. you know, a weak conglomerate federation, just a small union like the EU. Should it be united? Are you going to be one of those candidates like Trump and Clinton and everyone else who says we need to come together as one America and all be the same and unite and hug each other, which sounds nice and it's very nice? Or are there so many cultures, the left and the right and everything in between, so many different cultures, but primarily one group that wants less freedom and more authoritarian socialism than we have now, and one group that wants more freedom than we have now? And I don't see them ever getting, you know, united, because I am not going to unite with the New York City communists. It's just not going to happen ever. And me, I'm becoming a bigger fan of independence, eventually totally independence, eventually from the United States government. But you running for president, I assume that means you want to salvage it and unite the whole country. I want to hear what you think about that. Should it or could it be salvaged and united?
Yeah, so that's a really interesting question. So there's two different aspects to that. So first of all, we've got... you know, you've got the question of everybody's different and they're in different parts of the country and they want different things. And that kind of goes back to, yeah, well, the federal government shouldn't be dictating, you know, we shouldn't have the federal Department of Education that's teaching every, you know, basically saying everybody must learn the exact same thing. If you live in a different state, you have, you know, I don't know, if you live in a farm state and you want to grow up to be a farmer, they don't need to teach you about advertising. And it's, you know, I'm all in favor of, you know, learning a little bit about everything so you can decide what you want to be. But if you live in New York, you're going to want to learn about advertising and, you know, whatever, something like that. There's always that argument. The reality is, like, everyone should have the freedom to see everything that's in the world, which is great with the internet. Anyone can do that. You can see everything that's out there and you can decide what you want to learn about. You can move to another state if you want to learn something else. But as far as so there's that aspect of, you know, should the federal government be making the entire population pretty much homogenous in any aspect? I say no. Now, there is like a lot of separation and there's a lot of fighting between different groups of people. And I think a lot of that is just, you know, it's fueled by the media. And I know there are people out there like that.
Well, they fan the flames. But, they do.
Yeah. But the reality is, I think I don't want to say most people, but a lot of people aren't, you know, they aren't that, you know, they're like, you know, so let's look at Muslims for a minute. There are a lot of people who are afraid of Muslims, but there's a very, very small, and they're afraid just because of what they hear on the media, but there's a very, very small, population that would actually, you know, organize some group that's going to go around and hunt them down. You know, so the number of people who are kind of out there, like hating other groups is small. And yes, the media is fanning the flames and we have, we have a president who's, you know, he says he's not a racist, and most people say, well, he's never said anything actually racist. Okay, that may or may not be true, but he's not out there saying, guys, calm down, stop fighting. There's nobody up there saying that. There's nobody on the big stage. You've got some celebrities saying that. Well, but
the difference between, and I see what you're saying, there's a difference between fighting or saying stop fighting and then being united, as far as, you know, united in the sense of we need to be one state. Now here's where I'm getting at, and I think you would agree with me. America is now one state. I actually don't say the word America. It's weird to say. I've said the U.S. for years now.
Yeah, I always write United States with a lowercase u.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But if you speak to conservatives, and I think liberals too on the left, they say America. They say, mm-hmm. oh, we're one America, we're one state. And that's the mentality. We're all one state. So, you know, we need to, you know, not fight each other. We're one state, you know, your fellow citizens, your fellow statesmen. And again, I'm all about not fighting. I have plenty of friends who are lefties, and that's fine. But ultimately, I think, and I'm going to write an article later, and the title will be something like, sometimes divorce is the best option. You know, there are amicable divorces, right? And the divorce itself, because things have gotten so bad and they've grown apart, a divorce is a better alternative to state, right? Currently, take New Hampshire, which is a very libertarian state, but also a state like Maine, but also maybe Wyoming or Texas or Oklahoma, a state that really wants more freedom than they have now, versus the federal government, the U.S. government, but also most of the other states, most of the other people, they want less freedom. If you ask most people in the country, they vote for more and more government programs. Their governors and their mayors and their legislators on every level choose to grow the government and make more laws and more taxes, and maybe elect them. So that's essentially the citizenry of America saying they support it, they want the government to keep growing. The New York City budget was $73 billion a few years ago, then $86 billion this year. I believe it's over $100 billion. It's growing by 10-15% every year. And the people, almost 100% of the people, almost everyone, re-elects the mayor and the governor and all the legislators. That's what they want, and that's fine. I think they're stupid. I think communism and socialism and increasing taxes are stupid. But if that's what they want, we should be able to divorce from them. And New Hampshire or your state or any state, any area of the country should be able to walk away before things eventually do get bloody, because eventually they will, because they keep taking more of our money and more of our freedoms. So there's the not fighting aspect. And again, I don't want to fight anyone who lives in Massachusetts or New York. I don't care. I want to live with my family, with my house, with my possessions, with my lifestyle. And that's why running for president, and that's why I guess I'm in some kind of moral dilemma of, you know, good libertarian running for president, but the whole presidency, I suppose, represents, you know, something that unites the country, which I don't believe in uniting the country anymore.
Right. So I think maybe if I can answer what you're saying like this, everybody wants to look up to a leader, right? It's kind of in our nature, especially when we're, you know, as I talked about, when you're one of those people who hasn't gone full into adulthood where you are your own person. Now, it's normal, even as an adult, when you're running your own life, that you have influencers and you have heroes and people that you look up to. But I think when we're trapped in this kind of mentality that we think of ourselves as kids and we need parents and government to, you know, tell us what to do, then we always look up to that and we identify with that, right? Like people say, I'm this race. I identify with these celebrities or these leaders more than these other ones because I'm of the same race or of the same gender. In the same way, they do that with local leadership. They'll look up to their mayor, their governor, et cetera. When we look at this hierarchy of, you know, everybody needs to tell me how to run my life, but I don't like how, you know, I don't like what my parent is telling me, right? Like what happens when you ask for ice cream and your mom says no, you go to your dad and say, Dad, can I have some ice cream? You know, and see, oh, he's higher on the totem pole. Let's see if he'll give it to me. When you look at that in the perspective of the states, it's, oh, I don't like what this state is doing. I want to appeal to a higher authority, which is the president or the United States government, because they can come to my state and say, no, you can't do this. You're going to have to reverse that. And I totally agree with you on, you know, on the point that, you know, we're not homogenous. When we have, it's funny that, like, you know, when we have, or it's not funny, but, you know, when somebody wants to pass gun legislation, most people who are, you know, they're completely uninvolved. They're just, all they know is the rhetoric and they support you know, let's say gun control, they always want to do it at the federal level. And if you think about it, there's if there were one president of the United Nations that the entire world elected, they would all be asking that person to do it. The fact that the United Nations is kind of it's kind of more of like a union in the way that the United States is supposed to be a union, where we understand it's not, you know, it's not that the United Nations is the next level up in that hierarchy. We see that, we understand that, so we don't look to that as, you know, oh, the United Nations needs to do this.
I think it will become more powerful in the coming generations.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Because, I mean, if you look at the way the United States was, it was never intended to be this powerful, and it wasn't this powerful in the beginning. It was only after people kind of, you know, did that over time. And, you know, the European Union could end up doing that, you know, if it's around long enough. We've already got one state succeeding from there. But you know, I think somebody asked me this question, you know, what makes you think that you're good enough to tell me how to run my life as president? And my answer was, I don't. Nobody should tell you how to run your life. And, you know, we should look up to these leaders, especially these leaders in government. You know, we look up to, why do we look up to these people, especially as adults? Why do we look up to anybody? We have problems in our lives, and we need our problems solved. And that's what people ask politicians for, is please solve our problems. And if we can say, look, we can offer suggestions. We're not going to come in with a gun and say, look, this is how you fix things, and we're going to force everybody to do it. We want to teach people, stop asking other people, especially authorities, to solve your problems for you. What we can do is we can guide you into, you know, growing yourself so that you can solve your own problems. And that's kind of, you know, you know, we talk about the millennials and how their, you know, their growth, their maturity is stunted into that type of development. That's really what I think this country needs. And if it's, you know, if all the president becomes is a figurehead to, like, to empower individuals to think for themselves and solve their own problems, then, you know, I think that kind of throws out the question of, you know, like, should we have some big uniting thing? Because, you know, I always say this about the flag, the U.S. flag is a dangerous weapon, because if all you do is you pledge your allegiance to that flag, and you know, you're basically saying, whenever there's a president who gets up there and waves this flag, whatever he tells me to do, I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the most dangerous things that's out there. And we shouldn't be doing that. This is, you know, if you're into Christianity, that's the worshiping of the false idol. We shouldn't be doing this. We shouldn't be, you know, we shouldn't be following and identifying with a symbol whose meaning can be changed so rapidly by as simple as somebody else picking up the flag, handing it off to somebody else, and now its meaning has completely changed. We need to follow ourselves and find out who we really are. And, you know, it's okay to look to leaders and influences, but we need to teach people to be individuals and really, you know, find out who we are and solve our own problems.
Individualism and accountability, independence. I love it. I love the campaign. Where can people learn more about you and your campaign?
So you can go to Berman2020.com. There's legalizedpineapplepizza.com, which is another part of the platform, I'll talk about that for a second. It's basically, you know, when you have a discussion about, you know, whether or not to legalize drugs, some people will say, oh, well, I had a son and he overdosed on heroin, so I really don't think it's a good idea to legalize marijuana. And the reality is, like, you're having a discussion with somebody who's got an extreme emotional attachment to something in their personal life. But if we can talk about legalizing pineapple pizza, which some people are for and some people are against it, we can actually have a discussion about whether or not somebody else has the right to tell you what you can or cannot put in your body if it's not harming somebody else. Because you can overdose on pineapple pizza, right? You can get diabetes and...
So I should tell you that I just wrote an article 2 days ago. I published it on libertyblock.com, making the case for banning cheeseburgers, alcohol, and cigarettes.
Exactly. And so it's you know, it's that thing. Like, some people are still going to be emotionally attached to that. You can't take my cigarettes away. And so this is kind of just a fun way of doing that, where we can have that discussion without, you know, without getting too emotional about it. Because that's the other thing about politics. We get too emotionally involved to have a serious conversation about what these things are. So that's legalizedpineapplepizza.com. Berman2020.com. I'm on Facebook. If you go to facebook.com/taxationistheft2, because I wasn't the first one to get that one. Unfortunately, the first taxation is theft was purged in the last Facebook purge. But I will also say, unfortunately, that long before that happened, they turned into a pretty wacky conspiracy theory site. So, that is what it is. We're looking for volunteers and donations and everything else. So if you want to get on our Facebook page while we're still there, or follow any of our websites, do that, reach out.
And you're going to be campaigning in New Hampshire come 2020, right?
Absolutely.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. I'd love to help you with that. I'll post all your websites and your Facebook in the description. Daniel, thank you so much for coming on the program. It's fantastic to have you. One of the most awesome, guests, and I love the hat too.
Thank you. And thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Have a good night. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. See ya.